Hey guys, real quick before we get started, we are doing a free giveaway for listeners between now and May 31st. Cash prizes, free swag, yacht meetup tickets, San Diego Padre tickets, and more. All you got to do to qualify is go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and drop a 5-star review. Send a screenshot to giveaway@summerscapital.com and we'll be selecting lucky winners May 31st. As always, I appreciate the support. Now let's jump into the show.
My biggest thing is, you know, you only get what you ask for, right? Mm-hmm. And people call it manifestation or whatever it is, but it's like, if I were not to have asked for it, it would not have come to me. And every time I pick a market, it's because I have a good connection.
And real quick, yeah, to that point, that's the beauty of like putting everything out there for like the world to see. Like,
you never
for me,
know.
When I want something bad enough, I'm like, I'm going to put it on social media because I know if I put it out there, now I have to do it. And it holds you accountable, but it also allows you to attract what you're looking for because now everyone knows, oh, Soli's looking for a hotel in Palm Springs.
Welcome to the Rich Summers Report, where we talk real estate, business, and wealth building, all while keeping it real. No fluff, no BS. I hope that you enjoy the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of The Report. Today, we are in the studio here in downtown San Diego, and we got little partly skies outside, and we are coming off of the Midterm Rental Summit, I believe was the name of it, hosted by my man, Jesse Vasquez. But I'm excited because I got a special guest. I got someone who I've known for quite some time. I last saw her at the Bigger Pockets Conference out here in San Diego in October of 2022. She was hanging out at our yacht meetup. Shout out to Champagne Dave with the Champagne Yacht. But I got Soli Caetano. Soli, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. I was thinking about it. I'm like, how did we meet? We actually met through Alex Becasa.
We did.
A lender.
We did.
Who is an awesome dude I'm friends with, you're friends with as well. And that was leading into the Bigger Pockets Conference. And he was like, hey, you guys should meet each other. And then somehow we jumped on a call and we're like, let's do like a yacht meetup together.
I don't know how that happened. Yeah, it was like, let's just throw a big yacht party.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, when you do those types of things, you never know how it's going to go. I had no idea it would lead to us like hosting like yacht meetups on the regular.
No, it looked like a big hit. Yeah, it was super fun. A lot of great people there.
Yeah, it was a good time. That was the first time I think I met Tony and Sarah Robinson. And you brought a lot of really cool people on the boat. And everyone was just like super cool, great vibes. And it was like kind of just set the tone for the conference.
Good sushi.
Yeah, we had sushi, saxophone player, DJ. And now we do that like literally monthly during like the summer months, May through September.
Wow. People still talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's fun. And so I think this year we're actually thinking about keeping it going year round because
Ooh.
It's like that much of a hit. I'm like,
okay,
I'll go on the water in like December. Like, let's do like a holiday theme.
Honestly, December on the beach is beautiful. It's just the May gray that's a little hard.
And even if it's raining, like we can still like hang out indoors and still like have a great time.
Yeah, I'll come down for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But anyway, so fun fact. So you're actually going to laugh at this story. Alex did the refi for me on my 11 unit in Cincinnati and another 8-unit building in Cincinnati. And I decided recently to sell my 11 unit in Cincinnati. We listed it last week and we had like multiple offers like right away. And we went under contract, hard money, non-refundable EMD in Cincinnati. That's unheard of. But anyways, you invest in Cincinnati, by the way.
I do.
Yeah. So we'll have to jump into that. But anyways, so we buyer, blah, blah, blah. And Alex hits me up a few days later. He goes, dude, he goes, I thought I recognized this address. He goes, my buyer is buying your 11 unit. I'm like,
wow.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. What are the chances?
Yeah. What neighborhood is it in?
It's in Norwood.
Why didn't I buy it? I would have loved to buy that building.
Yeah.
That's funny. My first property was also in Norwood.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Norwood's a good area. I'm a little bit sad to let it go because it was like my first deal. It's my first ever deal. And it did really well. But I'm ready to move that. I'm ready to like trade in the old stuff for like newer stuff. So I'm doing a 1031 and I'm under contract on a, it was actually, Andrea was just sitting next to you. We're talking, that's the deal I'm buying. But I'm buying
that?
A 2009 built 4-bed, 4-bath with like a rooftop deck here in Mission Hills, San Diego. Newer construction for 1.65. And it's got views of the bay and downtown skyline, but it's like a turnkey short-term rental. And yeah, I'm just going to park my money in there. And, you know, in 10, 15 years, that thing will be worth $3 million, where that 11 unit will never be worth $3 million.
What a change.
Yeah,
a
it's
big
a big
change.
But
yeah.
I figure my team can manage it. And then we can host like events there and that sort of thing. So it'll be fun. But fun fact, the seller of this property comes to our meetup.
Wow.
And she's like, oh, I know Rich, blah, blah, blah. And they're carrying some paper. So I'm getting it for low money down, which is great. They're carrying some paper. So shout out to the seller of this property. And I'm excited because they're going to actually allow us to take over the property right away. So we just sent in the EMD today, and they're going to let us like take over the management of the property like right away before we even close. It's going to be like a 45 to 60 day escrow because the Cincinnati one's got to sell before we 1031 into this. And so they're like, hey, take it over right away. I'm like, cool, happy to do it. So
good,
it's kind of a win-win.
I feel like 1031 is going to be a little stressful if you can't identify your property fast enough. So,
but this is the best way to do it.
Yeah,
it's like you're in a contract on both at the same time.
Yeah.
And then like literally you'll close on one and then the next day you'll fund another one.
Beauty of meetups. Did you know the person before you went under contract?
No.
Oh,
but
you didn't.
The listing agent, fun fact, is actually one of my buddies. And he's been on this podcast. Shout out to Seth. Seth is a badass. But Seth was a listing agent on this property. And when we submitted the offer, he goes, oh my gosh, the sellers come to your meetup.
Okay.
And so I don't know who they are, but
do you think they accepted it because it was you though?
Maybe that's part of it. I mean, I think the seller finance portion of it, I think that probably had something to do with it. But yeah, I'm grateful for it. I definitely want to meet them formally and maybe talk shop a little bit, you know? Maybe we'll do a little closing dinner party.
Have them on your podcast.
Yeah. I love having closing dinners. Yeah, maybe we'll have them on the pod.
Yeah.
So anyways, you were just out here at the short midterm rental conference.
Yes.
How was it?
It was awesome. I think it was 600, 700 people. Cody Sanchez was there. Yeah, she was really awesome.
And you spoke.
I did speak.
What did you speak about?
Private money.
Okay.
Yeah. It's funny because I was supposed to speak about out-of-state investing and someone else got it on day one.
Really?
And talked about out-of-state investing. Oh. And I was like, ah, shoot, got to change my topic.
They stole your spot.
It's okay. I changed my topic. I pivoted.
Like last minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was great though. I mean, crowd was amazing.
Like raising private money?
Yeah, how to fund your deals with other people's
money. I love that.
Yeah. So that's how I built my portfolio and the really easy topic for me to talk about. I think a lot of people there were actually more advanced than I found at other conferences. Like a lot of conferences, a lot of newbies, like Bigger Pockets. You'll find people who want to get into the game but aren't in the game. This conference, the more I talk to people, they're like, oh, I own 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 different properties. And I'm like, oh, great. Let's talk about how you can now leverage other people's money to scale your portfolio. You've already got that credibility.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like with that topic, even for folks that have already raised money for deals, like they are still into that subject.
Always interesting.
You can always get better.
Yeah, I love hearing how other people raise money. I feel like everyone has a different process, different system, and always more to learn.
Yeah. So in the past, how have you, in terms of like raising private capital, how have you funded a lot of your deals?
What do you mean? Like,
are you raising from individual investors
to
fund your deals? And then you're getting a loan and then the equity you're bringing from investors as well.
So we're doing all debt.
All debt.
So yeah. Yes. So 100% financing. We're doing like the Burr strategy, or we're flipping and we're taking 100% debt. So 100% purchase price, 100% renovation. And then we're either refinancing or we're flipping it into a DSCR loan afterward.
Okay. I love that. And so do you typically set up like a separate investor LLC for each project?
No, I mean, because they're not technically inside the entity. So we have our own entities for flips and for rental properties, but they're just the lender. So like imagine like Wells Fargo. So they're getting a mortgage on the property, but they're not actually involved in the transaction at all. It's really short term. So they're in the deal for...
Is it just a promissory note?
A promissory note and a mortgage. Sometimes a personal guarantee.
Really?
And so, yeah.
Is there a trustee position on the property?
Like a mortgage? Like, are they getting an actual mortgage for that?
Yeah.
Yes. So they're getting a mortgage.
Oh,
yeah. A first mortgage.
Got it.
And so if we were, depending on the deal.
Oh, the investors are.
Yeah.
Oh,
so there's no equity from them. They're just getting a fixed return. Typically, it's somewhere around 10%. It can range from like 8 to 12%, depending on the deal, the term, the amount of money. And then when we refinance, we pay them back 100% and they're out of the deal.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of nice because there's a lot of people who come to me asking to partner. I'm sure with you too. It's all the time like, oh, I love what you've done. I love your portfolio. Can I like partner with you? And I'm really picky about partnerships. It's like getting married to someone. It's for better or for worse. Like you need to make sure that they're doing the right thing. And that's a hard level of trust to get to with most people. And so when people ask me to partner, I say, well, I'm not looking for active partnerships, but if you want to be a passive partner, this is what it means to be a private lender.
Mm.
And it's not as like simple. I think you have to do a lot of education on what private lending is because they don't know what it is. And so they're like, what does that mean? Like, just like you, does that mean I get equity? Like, how much money do I make? What happens if you default? And there's just a lot of questions. But once they hear like, okay, I get a fixed return, doesn't matter how the project goes. It can go terribly, it can go well. I get a fixed return. It's short term. So we can build the relationship. Be like, yeah, I'm interested in that. Like, I'd be down to try that. And that's how a lot of private lenders end up coming to me.
I love that. We, the first hotel that I bought, the Black Sands Inn, I actually used that model. And so, but the seller financed the deal, 70% of it. And then the rest, we went to investors and we created an investor LLC and they invested in that investor LLC. And then that investor LLC lent to the property LLC.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Was it like a fund sort of? Like a mini fund?
Not really a fund. It was it was 100% debt. So we just parlayed 70% seller finance. The rest of it came from the investors and that was debt. And then at the refi, we used all that money at the refi to pay off all the investors.
Okay. I've never heard anyone do it in that type of structuring, but it's a very similar concept. Just no LLC involved.
Right. And so you're going to the investors for the entire debt.
Entire one. Yeah.
Got
entire
it.
Amount.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And I love that model. Because it's a way for you to own 100% day one without using, you know, any of your own money or maybe a little bit of your money, depending on what you put into your deals. But also, I love what you said, you don't have a bunch of partners because, like you said, like you
messy.
Don't know who you're getting in bed with. And it can get really messy, but also decision making. Like in this game, as you like buy more and more real estate, you get busier and busier. And
right.
So all these decisions that need to make that need to happen when you have partners, you got to jump on calls and go through meetings. And then someone's like, oh, let's do this. And you're like, no, let's not. There's so much time wasted. It's crazy.
I had to go with like 15 different partners. I'm like, how do you do that? Like if you had once a week meetings with 15 different partners, that's like 15 meetings a week just to discuss what's going on. So I'd rather like partner with a small group of people and everyone have a specific set of a skill set and they bring something unique to the partnership. And then we can bring in outside investors as either debt or equity. So for syndications, we'd give equity. For regular burrs or flips that are smaller, we'll just do debt. But the core team doesn't change. We work on many projects together and all the other investors are separate.
Yeah. What were you doing before real estate?
I was a commercial real estate broker.
No. Are you serious?
Did I not tell you that before?
I never knew this.
Really?
Solely, come on.
I worked
why you keep the secrets?
I worked at Cushman & Wakefield.
Really?
Yeah. I was office leasing. I did.
You did office?
Office. Yeah.
Okay. I also what did, market?
All over the country. So Whoa. We did, I did like mid-sized corporate account management. And so our biggest client was AT&T. We managed the Western region, like 22,000 properties. I did a lot of building sales. So we sold in LA, all over. I did a lot of land sales, Alaska, San Jose, Kansas. But we've done a lot of things. When you work with mid-sized companies, you do a lot of stuff. So a lot of people are really specialized where they say, I only work on, you know, multifamily between this price range and this price range. When you do tenant rep corporate account management, you do whatever they ask you to do. And so we did, you know, build to suit developments. And that's actually how I found Cincinnati. One of our clients said, they had a small office in Cincinnati and they said, we want to do 100,000 square foot build. And so we flew out there. We toured with all the biggest developers and like wine and dine. And I was like, dang, this place is amazing. Like they just invested $1 billion downtown. We were driving through on this little bus thing. And they were saying like, look at all the construction. It's
uh-huh.
It's popping up everywhere. And I was like, and I looked on Zillow, it was $100,000. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
I actually love like the aesthetics of like Cincinnati near like the Ohio River, a lot of greenery. And then you got the
Beautiful.
River that flows through, you got the bridge, you got the downtown skyline and that downtown area like is popping
it's
off.
It's popping.
Yeah.
Honestly, like the sports stadiums, they totally redid everything. And so they're giving us the whole story of Cincinnati. And I like really fell in love with it. I was like, this is great. So I ended up picking that market because our co-brokers, so because we work in so many different markets, I always do, we'd find like local brokers in each market to work with. And he owned like 7 or 8 rental properties. And I was like, how interesting. What does that mean? And then when I started investing or decided like I should probably start, he was my first call.
Really?
Yep. Jumped on a Zoom call, showed me the market, said I should invest in Norwood.
He said that?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He owns a bunch of properties in Madisonville next door. But he walked through my property, said like, this is the one. 3 months later, closed and rest was history.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first market I went to. And fun fact, the broker, he was M&M broker at the time. He sold me both of the multifamily deals there. And now he's an investor in our fund.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, so cool. That's awesome. It goes full circle. And he's a good dude. So shout out to JD Schmergy. We've like become good friends over the years.
I know him.
You know JD?
Yeah.
He's great, right?
That's so funny.
Yeah, he's great. And so he's actually selling the 11 unit right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? We might as well sell the 8 unit too.
I have There's a no 10 unit. To it. Is it still for sale?
It is. I don't think you want it though. It's like, that one's like really like, it's in Covington on the Kentucky side.
Okay.
It's like C class and it just, I don't know. I don't think you want that property.
I have a 10 unit and he's definitely shopped buyers for it.
Really?
Yeah. So. Okay.
Oh, JD has?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. He's walked through it and everything. So it's funny. It's a really small market.
Yeah. He's a great dude. Like I was shocked when he like invested.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we keep in touch all the time or whatever, but I didn't talk to him in like probably 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
And then when we were raising for this last round, he reached out and he's like, yeah, my wife like listens to the podcast and like we want to like invest with you. And they ended up investing. And I was like, holy shit, I was never like expecting that. And but they're fucking good people. And like
people make good money out there. When I had friends who would make like a couple $100,000 and I was like, their houses are $100,000, and I'm like, what else do you do with your money?
Yeah, no,
people
totally
live like really good lives out there.
Yeah, always good vibes when like I go out there. Like we'll go out to like nice dinners and hang out. But
great food.
Yeah, great food. Actually, when those two properties close, I'm gonna have to fly out there.
Yeah,
and maybe I'll do a little closing dinner with him and his wife. You know, it'd be a good thing to do. And then we could get him out here to San Diego, get on the yacht, make it happen.
Yes, yeah, but brokerage was a really good. I wouldn't say it taught me like a ton about investing, but it taught me how to talk the real estate language. Mm. Like when I talk to brokers, I feel like I understand
more confident
how they talk and how I talk. And I know how to like schmooze them like they schmooze me. It's just a different language, like different vibe. You really learn how to like fit in with them. And that was really helpful, although we didn't learn much of like true investing concepts. Yeah.
When you were working with Cushman, was it commission only?
It was. I ended up then working for a startup brokerage, which was very similar. So that was commission too. And I was building my portfolio at the same time, but it was also the pandemic. So it was like a really weird time. Like I worked there as a quote unquote intern, but like I worked there full time. And so for 3 years before I signed on full time. And that was amazing. That was like 2017 to 2020. I learned so much. I did so many transactions. And then when 2020 hit and I quote unquote signed on full time officially, pandemic hit. And it was so difficult to lease office space in a time when everyone was like not in the office. And so I was writing a bunch of memos to companies about like everyone wanted to know, what are we doing in this shelter in place? And instead of doing deals, I was like, I'm just writing book reports at this point. And so I was kind of doing my memo things and I was kind of building my portfolio. And then at that point, like I owned 25 units in about a year and a half. And I said, all right, there's much more opportunity in the investing side. I've already built my, you know, portfolio. I've like got a good steady base of cash flow. I think at this point, you can always go back to brokerage. You're commission based. And
yeah, they'll always hire you back.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, we miss you. Yeah. Cause they don't pay you. And so they even tell me now, like if I wanted to come back, I could come back. But there's just so much more opportunity I saw. And going out on my own, and I was like, worst case scenario, I come back and that's okay.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but I actually wanted to be a commercial broker.
You'd be good.
Yeah. So I sold cell phones in college and I did really good. And then a couple of my coworkers, they went on to sell cars for Nissan. And they were like, yo, Rich, come over here. You'll make even more money. And so I went on and I started selling cars my last 2 years in college and I did really well. And I just loved like the hustle and
it's
I just,
fun.
I'm competitive. I used to play sports like when growing up. And so when I got into sales, I was like, I always wanted to be the best, you know? And so then I was like, okay, well, I enjoy sales. Where can I go to like make bigger commissions? And it was commercial real estate. So I graduated. It was 2008. I interviewed with CB Richard Ellis and another brokerage called Grubb & Ellis. CBRE's around. I don't know where Grubb & Ellis is. They might've got bought out since. But anyways, they had these like internship positions and I was 08. And I remember like everything was just coming down. Like I remember being in the car dealership working. And I remember just watching the news one day. I think it was October of like 2008. And like literally like this whole stock market was just pummeling, like just crumbling. The whole banking crisis was like going down. Like all the real estate deals were going back to the bank, all these foreclosures. And they were like, yo, Rich, we love your hustle. We love your energy. They're like, this is not the right time to get into the industry. And they pulled the positions. And I found myself in a car lot wondering, what am I going to do with my life? And then that's how I got into the ATC stuff. But that said, I always feel like if everything failed with what I'm doing, like I knew I could go like sell commercial real estate, or I could know I could go to like the car lot and like slang and probably make like $250. You know what I mean?
I know a lot of people who joined like my office when they were like from other industries, and they joined when they were 35 or 40 and they make $1 million like their second year. So I like to say it's good
to have a backup plan.
It's the industry where you can make the most amount of money with the least education. Like, be a good salesperson, you'll make $500,000, like at least.
And those skills, you know, carry over to, you know, what we were just talking about, raising private capital, you know, working with brokers and, you know, deal sourcing and that sort of thing. It goes hand in hand, especially negotiating deals. Mm-hmm. It's big. They say, like, if you're truly a sales expert, no one knows you're selling. It's true, though, right?
Yeah. In contracts, I feel like half my job was like reading contracts, negotiating leases. Like, yes, we had attorneys, but before they went to attorneys, we had to give our professional opinion on business terms. And so we got really good at anticipating what the attorneys were going to say and figuring out worst case scenarios. And so give me a contract and I could tell you probably what the attorney will say.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
The different skill set.
That's good. And by the way, you brought someone that you partnered with on the yacht. I think his name's Phil.
Yeah.
How's Phil doing?
Yeah, he is. We're flipping houses together still in Augusta, Georgia. So yeah, he's good. He has a good construction firm. He has a good property management firm.
Love that. You ever go out to Augusta and play golf on their golf course?
The Masters just happened. And everyone always asks me because I invest there. They're like, oh, the Masters tournament. Yeah. And I was like,
I thought it was the first time me asking.
He was actually the turf manager at Augusta National. And so I'm like, why don't our rentals have better grass? But they spend so much time on their grass. Yeah, it's good. Flipping houses is after a while is very like copy paste, cut and repeat. And so when you have a system in place, it's like you almost forget how many you're doing. He'll send pictures. I'm like, which one is that? They literally all look the same. Mm-hmm. But that's like the whole process when you're doing low end types of flips, then you don't have to be super high design. Although I will say with the market slowing, the properties that do have something special about them are the ones that sell faster.
What do you
and
mean?
So, like, I mean, it could be something small, like a really cool backsplash or like, I don't know, an accent wall, which it's hard when you're doing flips at scale to be like, well, make a cute mural on the wall and like your contractors are confused, but or like do this cool pattern on the backsplash. But when you spend just like a little bit more time, I find that those houses sell for more and they sell faster. And when I think about what I lease and what I buy, it's like, would I spend $10,000 more for a backsplash I love? I would. And so I think that's what buyers think too. And so trying to think about like how I buy things, but also remembering that I'm not an Augusta, Georgia resident. So also my preferences, I got to take with a grain of salt.
Yeah. What's your guys' like bread and butter in terms of the homes that you are flipping? Like, how big are these homes?
3-2.
Okay.
1,300 square feet.
And what's the price point you're buying them?
Something around like 70,000, 80,000, 90,000.
That's cheaper than Cincinnati.
It's cheaper. And the renovations are easier. So what I found is that when you renovate in Cincinnati, you have to have a ginormous contingency because you start opening up walls and there's like knob and tube and there's cast iron pipes and like you just forgot about this. And so like the amount of surprises that come up, like a small renovation for me in Cincinnati is maybe like, I don't know, $50,000, but that's like a big renovation in Augusta. The houses there were built in 1950s and they're super cut and dry. So like the first renovation I ever did out there, we bought the house for $67,000. We put in $7,000.
Okay.
I was like, I don't even know what you buy for $7,000.
Right.
Like nothing. It appraised for $120,000.
Whoa.
And I was like, this is insane. Like the just the difference in construction when you're working on slightly newer properties, I think is massive. However, I personally like Cincinnati better.
Why?
Maybe it's just I like the market. When you go to Augusta, Georgia, no offense to people who live there, I'm just like, what do you do here? I went and I lived there for a month and we went laser tagging.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, I'm not really sure
what
to do. I found it boring.
Small town.
small town. There's not really a downtown. And so, and there wasn't very many young people. It's like a southern town, very conservative. And so when I think of like hustle and bustle, I think that there's pockets in Cincinnati that are growing faster. So maybe the market as a whole is not growing really fast, but if you invest in the right zip codes, you're seeing your properties double in value within a few years. And so that's kind of what like my favorite strategy is. And from a rental property perspective, I like to buy in Cincinnati still because I know my zip code so well. And if we can get properties, like we just bought a duplex at $125,000 in Cincinnati.
Wow.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Next, it's near Norwood. So yeah, okay. Off-market deal. Put in $100,000, but like that property will probably double in value in the next, I don't know, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I bought the 11 unit in 2019 in Norwood for $350,000.
$350,000?
So 31 a door.
Oh my gosh.
$350,000. And then under contract now for $815,000.
Oh gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So that's what? 2.5x in 5 years. That's not bad.
So that's my first property too. I bought it for $98,000. It appraised 6 months later for $155,000. And I put like 10 grand into it, like really not that much. Honestly, the biggest value add was I put up a closet in,
really?
In the dining room and called it a bedroom. And
oh, nice. So you added a bedroom.
Three bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
But today it's worth like $180,000. I'm like, that's pretty good for just a, you know, $98,000 property. But I know what you told me is like when we were talking 2 years ago in that restaurant is like, okay, but your property doubles from 100 to 200,000. You're talking 100,000, you know? How many do you have to do to make $1 million? Where a lot, like honestly, it's like kind of a lot of properties to go well to make 100. I mean, and you have to wait a couple years. Where your property in Scottsdale, right? Like make $1 million in equity.
Yeah.
Like super fast. It's
yes.
Like 6 months and you've $1 million richer.
It's perspective.
I know.
Yeah.
It totally changed my mind. I was like, wow. You know, honestly, I never thought about it that way. And so that kind of like got the wheels turning and why I was kind of pursuing bigger deals. And ultimately, part of the reason why we're buying a boutique hotel in Palm Springs.
Ooh, all right. I want to hear all about this hotel. So how did this idea even come to fruition? Because I remember I was traveling during Christmas break. We took 2 weeks off here in the office. And I remember I was traveling to Buenos Aires and I missed my connecting flight in Dallas-Fort Worth. And the next flight out was not for 24 hours. And so I was stuck in Dallas. They put me up at the Grand Hyatt that was actually at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. It's kind of cool. Like you're like staying in a hotel and your room is like overlooking the runway. So you're just like watching these planes take off. And I remember sitting there at my desk looking out the window with the airplanes and we jumped on a call. And that was the first time I had connected with you in a little bit. And you were like talking about a deal you were like thinking about partnering on. But how did this whole idea even come to fruition before that call?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was like goal setting in 2023 at the end of the year, I have bought a lot of what I like to call boring properties. And they're amazing for building wealth. I think they're not amazing for sparking creativity and joy. And so, you know, copy, paste, cut and repeat, cookie cutter flips, amazing for generating cash. But what I think about like lights me up is something that pushes the boundaries of like creativity and experience. And I was like, how fun would it be to work on that? So I always told myself like when I got started, you know, someday I'll work on something fun. And someday. And I never thought that someday would come so soon, but I realized that I had built, you know, 45 units of like really boring cash flow.
Yeah.
And I was like, why not now? Like,
yeah.
What am I waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
And so I set a goal for, you know, 2024 to get involved in the hospitality, you know, maybe like a, I don't know, something that you own, like a 13, uh-huh. 12, 10 unit. Non-staff, like STR model. I'm like, oh, that could be cool. Like do a hybrid midterm rental, short-term rental, just something that kind of pushed the boundaries of creativity. And I could go a little higher end design. And then two of my friends, I saw a post on their Instagram, like we're under contract for a hotel in Estes Park. And I jokingly, I just felt like a little tinge of like jealousy. And I was like, huh. they're really good friends. And I jokingly was like, do you need help raising capital on that? And then she was like, yeah, actually, we do. And so that's kind of how I got involved in that deal. That deal ended up falling apart because of like, it was 20 cabins and it was a development site where we could build like essentially we wanted to build like a geodome clamping site.
That'd be pretty cool. Huh?
It would have been amazing.
What is a geodome? Is that like the
It looks like an igloo, like an igloo sort of thing.
And it's kind of see-through?
Yeah. I mean, it's see-through on the top. Like, there's a big skylight at the top, so you can look at the stars. Like, it kind of like, but it's fully, there's a module that you put inside of it that's like an actual bedroom and a kitchen, full plumbing.
That's pretty cool. What is one of those cost to like put together brand new?
$100,000.
$100,000?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do they rent for a night?
Depends on where you are, but they can rent for like, on the high season, like $500 to $1,000 a night.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, if it's in a good location.
Sure.
And so the problem with Estes Park, in my opinion, is that the labor market's really difficult. It's a little closed in area. So like, and then the weather is extreme. I remember talking to we flew out there, like talked to the lenders, and they're like, are you sure you want to invest here? And we're like, what
really?
Do you mean?
The lender said that.
The lender's Whoa. Like, I just want to tell you that we had like crazy wildfires come over and shut the whole town down. We've had floods, like up where the spot was when we were building. They're like, you need to build for hurricane wind speed, like Whoa. 180 mile winds. And we're like, what?
Yo,
what is
crazy.
This place?
Yes.
And we were right at the entrance of Rocky Mountain National Park, and it's a little bit of an older demographic. The young people just have not really entered the market yet. And so
the young people are up there riding at Breckenridge.
Yeah, there's no skiing. There's no skiing there. So I think that's kind of what's limiting it. And so when we were looking at comps, and you said the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. And
what I said to you.
You said, because I was like, would you buy this deal? And you were like, you know, when I look at the comps, there's nothing supporting that top end of the market. When you're going to refinance, if you can hit the numbers that you want by like an NOI cap rate basis, mm-hmm. like, sure, but per door, there's nothing supporting your valuation. And you told me that within 5 minutes of talking to you. And I was like, oh, he's so right. And so anyways, it ended up falling apart. I think it was the best move because of the development. Like, I think the development could have been great. There was no comps. Like, that was a first of its kind, high-end sort of glamping site there. And I always ask people, like, how do you comp those things?
Yeah, it's tough.
How do you have an ADR? Like, we were pulling mm-hmm. ADRs from, like, I don't know, 90 miles away because they didn't exist yet. And so pitching to investors, it's like, how do you support that? It's really difficult. So that one dropped. And then we were sad.
But real quick.
Yeah.
Like, I've gotten deals on a contract where we do the entire due diligence and we end up canceling. And it's like, you know, it does suck for a little bit.
A lot
and you're
of
like,
money.
Oh, man, it's kind of a bummer. Yeah. But like, every time you do that, you become a better version of yourself. And like, it's not a waste of time because like, think about all the lessons you learned.
Yeah, we learned
and all
a lot.
The experience that you gathered. And like, now the next shot you get, you're that much better. And so each time I've done that, people are like, oh man, it sucks. We had to cancel. I'm like, no, that was a fucking learning experience.
It was.
It's part of the fucking game.
And I think what is interesting, it's like, I would not have really like seriously got into boutique hotels unless I happened to see that they were under contract because mm-hmm. I don't think I was going to seriously start looking. I was just in my head, like, eventually I'll do it. And then I saw it. And then after working together, we're like, oh, this is a really awesome team. Well, why don't we just keep looking for the next property? And so we ended up looking. I love California. I'm from the Bay Area. I love San Diego. I love Santa Barbara. And so I was like, how about we look in California markets, but there's already a high demand and there's higher comps that support what we want to do.
For sure.
And so I went to do you know Amy Majuri?
I do not.
Oh, who's you should that? Talk to her.
Yeah?
She teaches private money.
Okay.
Like, but she has like a big group she's
really?
Amazing. I love
okay.
her.
And she lives out here in San Diego?
Austin,
okay.
Yeah. Cool. And so she was hosting like a kind of a mini like creator summit type thing where there's like 15 real estate entrepreneurs in a room. And I was one of the people I sat next to just happened to say like, oh, I own a boutique hotel in Palm Springs. And I jokingly was like, oh, fun. Like, want to introduce me? Like, do you have an agent I could talk to? And she's like, yeah. And so introduced me and I talked to him. And 2 weeks later was in Palm Springs. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, honestly, like my biggest thing is, you know, you only get what you ask for. Right. Mm-hmm. And people call it manifestation or whatever it is, but it's like, if I were not to have asked for it, it would not have come to me. And every time I pick a market, it's because I have a good connection.
So yes.
I toured Palm Springs.
And real quick, yeah. to that point, that's the beauty of like putting everything out there for like the world to see. Like
you never
for me,
know.
When I want something bad enough, I'm like, I'll put it on social media because I know if I put it out there, now I have to do it. And it holds you accountable, but it also allows you to attract what you're looking for, because now everyone knows, oh, Soli's looking for a hotel in Palm Springs.
Yeah. So I did this challenge on Instagram where I was like, 60 days to my first boutique hotel.
I saw that. I love that.
Day 14, we went under contract.
I love it.
Which is crazy. But the minute, like, I don't know, maybe just a good gut sense, but the minute we walked into this property, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the one.
Yeah.
I was like, is it too soon to take a group picture in front of it?
As a busy real estate investor or entrepreneur, time is money and first impression is everything. Every day to make it easy on myself, I wear Built Basics clothing. Whether you're a girl or guy looking for workout gear, joggers, shirts, button-downs, hats, or shoes, Built's got you covered. Super comfortable, tight in all the right places to make you look fresh and clean all the time. Visit BuiltBasics.com and use promo code SUMMERS20 to receive 20% off of your order. Again, that's BuiltBasics.com. That's BuiltBasics.com. Use promo code SUMMERS20 to receive 20% off of your order. Now back to the show.
I love to move quick too. Like when I have a new idea, like here at the office, I'll tell a team, they're like, all right, when are we going to do it? I'm like,
tomorrow.
We're rolling it out in 24 hours.
Yeah.
They're like, well, what about this? And I'm like, no.
Saw it.
I'm like, don't worry about all the stuff. We'll figure it out. Just roll it out.
Underwrote it, put an offer in the next morning. We're under contract like right after that. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. Like, it just, I mean, what I like the most about the Palm Springs market, though, is it's luxury. Like, there is cheaper stuff. Like, we're buying it for $200,000 a key, but there are comps, like Soho House just bought it for $1 million a key. I was like, $1 million? But there's a lot of comps out there that are, like, $300,000, $380,000 that are unrenovated comps. And the renovated comps are $450,000, $475,000, $500,000 a key.
That's great.
And so there's just a lot of room in the
deal. What's the story behind this deal? The seller, how long has the seller owned it? And why are they selling it?
A super rich person bought it, the story is it was a gay nude resort.
Really?
Yeah.
A gay nudist resort. Okay.
There's a lot of those in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
And they bought it, and it's funny because it's like the walls are so high. It's like a big 10-foot concrete wall, so no one can see inside. They bought it. They wanted to, you know, renovate it. They had a big dream. They have a lot of money, and they wanted to build this like crazy wedding platform, and the city denied them. And they're like, we're done with it. We're not going to work on this project anymore. And so it sat vacant for like 2 years.
Just really?
Yeah. Finally, they're like, we're going to just sell it. We're going to get out. They were working on some other stuff. It was just kind of like,
so this thing hasn't operated with guests in 2 years.
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
Did they close up the walls? They painted it white. They put it on the market. And they were sophisticated buyers, though. So I think they're like, I don't know, 80-year-old or something. Like very sophisticated real estate investors that just have a lot of money. And so put together like a credibility package that was pretty legit. I know that they had a couple other offers before that. But the feedback was that they seemed wishy-washy and they didn't seem super credible. And so we put together like a big credibility stack and turned it in with our offer. And he's like, I like these guys.
Yeah, I love that. So tell me what you put in the credibility stack.
It was like bios, our plan for the property, our vision, which is maybe a lot. But we really felt like this was the one hotel experience. And so, again, like I don't have hotel experience. I have a lot of like furnished rental experience. We have a big portfolio. Partners had a co-hosting company, so had like management experience, and then they were in a hotel mastermind, so had like all his experience in there too with past like hotels that he's done. So it was maybe like 10 pages of information, and I think it just showed like an extra level of we care about this and we're serious about it, and we were able to move super fast. So.
I love that. I do something similar for like lending, so if I need to get some like certain lending done, I typically will put together like a 3 or 4 page deck with like photos and like our business plan, like renderings of what we're going to do to the property, and then some like high level numbers. And then I will record like a 5-minute Loom video.
I do the same thing.
And I will literally just go over the business plan, kind of like tell them a little bit about myself and just kind of walk them through the deal. And I don't know if these lenders watch it, but it helps secure lending, especially if it's like a new lender. And and it works. But I've never done that for an offer. But I wonder how that would work. Like literally submitting an offer and then doing a short 5-minute video to the seller, to the broker, just explaining like why you want to buy the deal, demonstrating your ability to close. And it's an opportunity for them to kind of get to know you a little bit too. People like a little personal touch.
Yeah. And so like one of my partners is like a big architect and has worked on $1 billion projects. And so like putting in even that, it's like we've done architecture development, like build-to-suit development for billion-dollar projects. And it just shows a lot of credibility. So I think it, I mean, it's not even a big deal. It's 13 units. It's $3 million. It's, to them, it's probably like, like it's a little peanut deal. But to us, we're like excited. I think it
I'm
feels like
for
a,
you guys.
I'm excited. It's a, it feels like a good size to get started on and to kind of build. The hard part is it's fully staffed. We're going to fully staff it.
Because, and it, let me ask you a question. Yeah. So like whenever I do like a bigger deal, it kind of like pushes me like out of like on my the edge of my comfort zone in a good way, right? But it can be, it can feel a little bit overwhelming and that sort of thing. But with this being 13 units and at that price point, do you feel like it's easier to grasp your mind around?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't feel like it's far outside my comfort zone. I would say because it's luxury, that's kind of where I'm like, you know, before it's like we pick, you know, the best LVP bang for buck, you know, and it's like, we could tell you what the ROI difference is between LVP and carpet, but tell me what the difference is between using a $15 per square foot tile and a $45 per square foot tile. It's like, it's really difficult. It's like, does it add to the experience or does it detract?
45, that's an expensive tile there, Sully.
Just an example. There are some really expensive
it's got three
tiles.
Carat, 3 carat gold in the tile.
No, I know. It's really expensive. But yeah, I think that's like where I get, I think that when you look at the comps, we have so much room in the numbers that it's more about, does it, again, does it add to the experience? But it's like, what exactly ROI do you get on like a salt sauna? Like, I can't tell you the exact number, but I could tell you it'd be cool for marketing.
Yes. But I love what you guys did here, because I always say like, in order for me to buy right now, like I need to one, be able to buy at a discount, which you guys are doing. And then I need to be able to add tremendous value, which you guys are also going to be doing. And you know, I say that, that's generally speaking. Now with this property, I'm 1031ing it. There's no value to be added. I'm just parking money, but that's like just me. There's no investors. And that's a deal that I'm going to just sit on for 10, 15, 20 years.
So can't
I'm like,
wait
I can
that
do
day.
That, right? I can do that. But with a lot of these other like commercial projects, like we always got to be adding value. And so I love that you guys are doing that. So tell me, what is the business plan?
In terms of like renovation timeline.
And then what?
So just tell me, give me the whole thing. Is like June 1st-ish. And so the plan is to start construction immediately. Our timeline is 6 months. And so it is fairly cosmetic. And so it's like the
you're not moving walls around or plumbing.
No, the way they left it was blank slate, which is awesome. It's like really no demo. It's just the bathrooms have already been demoed. It's blank. It's awesome, right? It's a blank slate. And so you throw up some, you know, paint, wallpaper and furniture. It's like that could be done pretty quickly. But what we're building is there's a big like corporate buyout scene in Palm Springs, like a wedding, bachelorette party, Coachella buyouts. And so there has to be some level of like common area space that's air conditioned because it gets to be 120 degrees out there. And so we're building that because it doesn't exist right now, along with semi-permanent structures that are shaded. And so I think that the outdoor part will be a lot more involved than the indoor part. So 6 months of construction. The plan is to be fully operational by the end of the year so that we can do our cost seg and get those tax benefits.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, I'm excited. I actually don't hang out in Palm Springs a whole lot.
I'm surprised. But you seem like a Palm Springs guy.
Yeah, I haven't been out there in like 10 or maybe 12 years, but I've never been to Coachella either. So maybe I just missed it. They
just
had two weekends.
They have Stagecoach this weekend.
That sounds fun too. I do like a little country music, but I think next year maybe I'll have to hit Coachella and maybe I'll come check out your hotel.
That'd be really fun. It's super fun. I mean, the downtown's big. It's a really big downtown. It's really lively. I think a lot of people just go there. It's a big driving destination though. So like 2 hours from LA, 2 hours from San Diego, an hour from Joshua Tree. And so there's a lot of people, like there's a lot of interesting concepts even about like memberships to hotels. Like people buy memberships because they just go once a month to Palm Springs to hang out.
Oh, so you can sell memberships.
So that's kind of what I'm looking to do. Like I'm a big, you know, how can we get some recurring revenue in here? It's like if people buy memberships, kind of like Soho House, and they get discounts, and there's like, it's all about the programming, right? It's like, how can you program, you know, like a wellness package where everybody there is there for morning yoga, vitamin drips, like, I don't know, juice cleanses.
Are you into all that stuff?
I am.
Are you?
I love wellness. And just because I think I told you before, like, I had terrible health issues last year. That's probably why I haven't seen you in like 2 years.
Yeah. You feeling better now? Everything's good
I'm
now?
Like way better now. Good. But it took me like an
you
entire,
look great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like a whole year to like get rid of like all the bad health stuff. And so now I'm just like, if I could do that for my like quote unquote job, like yeah. I got to go try all the masseuses in town for work. Like, ugh, that's so fun.
Right.
So I think hospitality, there's so much more room to have fun. And like, for example,
there's more levers to pull.
Yeah, like one of the things I want to do is create like a wellness partners book. Like you want to book a Reiki massage? Like we got a guy for that. They'll come to your room and do it for you. Like acupuncture, sure thing. And so I think that'll be like, I don't think that concept exists in Palm Springs right now. And so I'm really excited to build it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And to your point, there's like so many levers you can pull. So like, for example, we're putting in a pickleball court at our Washington Hotel at Lake Chelan. So we're rebranding it, but that property, it was basically turnkey. It was like a new construction. But I'm like, there was this plot of grass like on the next to the pool area. I'm like, let's throw in a pickleball court and let's just see what happens. So we're putting one in. They're going to start building it in 2 weeks. And we're rebranding the hotel. So we bought it. It was called the Manson Bay Suites, which I don't really love the name. And so it's going to be the Lodge Lake Chelan.
I like that.
Yeah. And so we're actually going to put like the new logo on the pickleball court.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rob, do you know Rob Abasolo?
I know of him. I've actually met him one time at the Bigger Pockets conference.
Okay.
But I don't know him personally.
He'd be a good guest. He's super yeah. nice. So he did a whole presentation at the MTR summit about like
pickleball courts.
Kind of. It was like how amenities matter and how sometimes the best thing to do is to optimize your portfolio instead of just buying more properties. And so his properties, like he had one property that was making like, I'm going to botch his numbers, but like $15,000, $18,000 a month. But his monthly net was like $20,000. So he's like, sounds good, but we were losing money. And then he built out like a triple pickleball court for not that much money. And now they're booking like $40,000 months.
I saw his video on that. And
yeah.
I got a property in Scottsdale too, pickleball court. Us just putting pickleball court in the listing title, like on Airbnb, it like
crazy.
Increased the revenue by like 35% just
yeah.
by doing that.
It's
which crazy. Is
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was a really interesting. Yeah. So like there's like the buyouts, the food and beverage is a big thing, just like weddings, events. Palm Springs does a great job at programming in general. Like there's Indian Wells.
Yeah. There's gambling there, right? Casinos.
There's a casino.
I do like to play poker.
There's Modernism Week. And so people are
what
like.
What is that?
It's like a week where they talk about modernism, but apparently it's a big deal in Palm Springs. Like everybody's there and it's booked out. There's like Pride, which is a big deal because the whole area became like booming because of just, I don't know, like LGBTQ people who ended up creating gay nude resort.
Yeah. There's a bunch of those out there.
There's a ton.
Yeah.
And I toured some of them. It's hard to sneak in. It's hard to come up with it. Well, you gotta talk
without
your way.
Being creepy.
It's like, hi, I'm here. Because my gay friend wants to host a wedding.
Oh,
and they're
you
like,
okay.
You know, it's men only, right? And I'm like, yeah, I won't be there.
You could probably get away with it.
No, they let me in.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll close my eyes. And they're like, you seem worse. So it was fun. I'm really excited. It's definitely a new chapter, but I'm still buying what I like to call boring real estate. If you have the systems, you have the team, why not? It's just, you know, why not do a little bit more of like, if you can, why wait? You know, I could say someday forever, or someday I'll work on something fun, but like, it's cool that someday happens to be now.
Yeah, no, totally. And to your point, I think like the more that you push yourself to like do bigger deals and to like kind of like push your comfort zone a little bit, the quicker you grow. And, you know, I've noticed that at least for me, like we like to make a lot of decisions quickly. And a lot of the stuff that we do, we self-manage. And so when we have to make a decision, we don't like jump on calls with a bunch of people and like, you know, go through grueling hours and hours of like meetings to make a decision. We just make a decision and go. And
yeah.
Like, you know, even if it's the wrong decision, it's okay. We'll make a pivot.
Fail fast.
And we can pivot really quickly. And
yeah.
That's like the beauty of like having like your own, just being like fully like vertically integrated and not having a ton of partners is we can just pivot like left and right. as quick as we want to. And when you can do that, you can grow just so much quicker.
Yeah, we're self-managing too. So I'm really curious to see how that goes. But I'm excited to buy a second hotel already.
Are you? You're not messing around. Okay, tell me what you have in mind.
Because there's so many economies of scale to having two properties that are close. Like 13 units to be fully staffed is, it's expensive to be fully staffed. If you had a property across the street that was 20 units, but you shared a lot of things, yeah, like that is way more efficient. And so I think having another one, it's just the economies of scale are so big. I think the perfect size is maybe like 20 units, 25 units. And 13 is just like on the cusp of being a little too small. But I know some like 9-unit properties that are fully staffed too. So people make it work because people want that like high touch, high nightly rate type of thing. Like if you're going to charge $1,000 a night, you better have someone to hand you a drink.
When you say fully staffed, what kind of staff are you going to have at this hotel?
So for the smaller hotels, I've heard that people have general managers that double as like, quote unquote, bartenders. We'll have two part-time so that they overlap. And if one goes out of town, but then they're on call as well. And then just a staff of cleaners. So that's really what fully staffed means. And then VAs on the back end to deal with like if people check in at 1 a.m. type of thing.
Sure.
We're not going to have someone sleeping there overnight.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. We operate for the most part remotely when we can. Our 10 unit up in Shelter Cove, California, we literally just have two full-time housekeepers and we have like one part-time, and we kind of lean on them for like certain things, but then we have the VAs, but that one is, it's easy. Self-check-in, self-checkout's very easy. There's no lobby that the guests have to go through, and it's easy for everyone to kind of find their door if you would. But like, we don't have all the amenities that you have, you know, we have like a fire pit, we have a jacuzzi and that's it.
Yeah. It's just different.
Yeah.
We hired a consultant actually, and I think it's fascinating to work with him. I love working with him. He opened up, he started, he renovated, and he sold at the time what was the highest comp in Palm Springs. And so now he met him because my friend who introduced me to the broker who has a hotel in Palm Springs, she worked with him to like do like all the conceptual design, like the food and beverage, the hiring, just having like a coach there to be like, so what do we do? And so now we're working with him too. And I just actually got off a call with him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's so fun. I was like, do we want to put the bar here or do we want to put the bar here? And I was like, what do you think about the massage tables here? He's like, how about you put them over here? And he's like, let me call in my kitchen consultant. And I was like, it's so helpful to work with somebody. Like, he's really not that expensive. It was like $5,000 or something to work with him. But he's able to fine tune our underwriting because he knows all of the financials of that property. He determined that our comp set is actually not our comp set. Like we're one tier above that comp set. And like what amenities are worth putting in, what are not worth putting in, what do you splurge on, what do you save on, what actually matters to the Palm Springs crowd. And so we're able to learn much faster. It's like hiring a mentor. I mean, I think it's worth it because we're not making all the mistakes that he made when he first started.
I love that. So I wanted to congratulate you, by the way. You launched like a new community.
And, oh, I did in September.
So, yeah. Tell me all about it.
All about out-of-state investing. So even though I'm investing in California now, I'm a big believer in building like a boring base of cash flow. People ask me like, does that mean I should buy a boutique hotel before I buy a single family rental? And I'm like, no, buy the single family rental because it's going to teach you a lot of stuff about buying real estate. And typically, they don't have much money to start. And so I'm like, well, learn the process of buying real estate through a low-risk transaction and then build your way up to it if that's what you want. That's at least my concept of investing. And so we teach people how to basically build cash flow in affordable markets. So we have a 425-person community right now. We launched last September. But we have people investing in like Oklahoma City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Kansas City, just places around that are just way more affordable and your money goes further.
Yeah, I love that. And so with this community, with our boutique hotel mastermind, one of the best parts for me is to see the community members like hanging out with each other and partnering with each other and like really becoming tight, like close friends, which is like really cool to see. Your community is a lot bigger. You said how many folks are in it right now?
425.
425.
Yeah.
Okay. And are you guys doing like retreats or any live events for them?
Our first event's actually in May.
Really?
So I'm
what are
excited.
You guys doing?
We're doing a conference in Los Angeles, in Hollywood.
I love that.
I'm really excited. In Hollywood.
Fancy.
I know.
Red
it's gonna
carpet?
Be like a, it's going to be like a wellness and real estate event, actually. So like Aloe Yoga is coming out and we're doing some yoga. Like we're doing some surprise wellness integrations and stuff like that. But I would say, I mean, it works similarly. Like we have small meetups, like members will meet up. A lot of our members are actually based in California, funny enough. So like Los Angeles, San Diego, and the Bay Area. So we'll have like regional meetups with people. And so they still get like, we tend to tag, we have a whole like custom platform, but depending on what they want, where they want to invest and where they live, we'll introduce them to members who relate to those things.
Okay. That's pretty cool. And are you going to do more than one a year?
More than one.
Event?
Like
event,
a live event? Oh, I don't know.
It's
event
a lot of
planning
work,
is
right?
hard. I it know. Is. It's also expensive. So I was telling someone that for like 100 people, 100 person event, $100,000 to throw. It's really expensive. And it takes a lot of time. So I guess it depends on how well it goes. If it's like, dang, this is amazing, then maybe. We do one virtual one. So I hosted an event last September, which is actually what we used to launch the community. But that one was big. It was like 10,000 people virtually. And so I think it's fun to do both. I mean, when you have an in-person event, all the East Coasters are mad because they're like, we don't want to fly across the country. So I think we'll probably do one in-person and one virtual event and then just like smaller meetups regionally.
Yeah. We had our first retreat for our mastermind down in Cabo like a month ago. And it was so much fun. And I was like, oh, we got to do more of these. That
yeah.
was my takeaway.
When's your next one?
I don't know. I think we're going to try to do some sort of like thing at least like once every 3 months.
Okay. They, oh, that's often.
They probably won't be like as dialed as the Cabo one. We'll probably do something like that like once a year, maybe twice a year. But I was thinking at a minimum, like once every 3 months, like let's do like a cool like weekend event out here in San Diego. And we can go out in the water. We can do like, you know, a couple good like speaking like engagements and then like, you know, just do some cool stuff and really network and hang out, go out to some nice dinners and enjoy each other's company. But I was thinking, to your point, yes, live events are very challenging. And I think the idea is like, I mean, a lot of folks that I know that host these big like conferences, like they're taking baths, like they're trying to break even. That's the goal, you know, and then maybe they'll make money on the back end. But like a lot of them are fronting a lot of money and then they don't make it up.
Oh,
and
poor like, oh, Jesse. I know. I was like, Jesse looks so stressed. Ah, I love Jesse. He's really nice. I was like, dang, Jesse, take a deep breath, like go take a bath, like go relax. Your event is over.
He texted me on like Sunday. He texted me like Sunday, like late evening. He's like, hey, dude, like one of my speakers canceled last minute.
Oh, no. He's like, oh, because he had a baby, right?
He's like, would you be interested in jumping in?
Oh, you couldn't do it?
I told him possibly. And I was like, when would it be and what time? And he's like, well... He's like, and we went back and forth, and then we didn't end up doing it. But
so
I don't even know what the type
so
of stuff was.
Stressful.
But he didn't feel like boutique hotel investing was going to be conducive with like his audience.
Mm.
Yeah, and so he told me he's like, if you could spin it to like corporate rentals, and I was like, yeah. I don't do that.
That's very specific.
Yeah. I was like,
I don't know anything about corporate.
He's
rentals.
Like, do you do corporate rentals for your hotels? And I was like, dude, I don't.
Someone asked me, I was like, what's that? It's like so niche. I cannot answer any questions about corporate rentals, but
yeah,
it's a really good conference. But
anyways, these conferences are like, they're tough to throw, right? And, you know, especially the bigger ones, like we saw our STR WealthCon in Nashville. I've gone 3 years in a row now, and this one was like the biggest one, and they are not going to do another one next year.
Oh, no,
did three
really?
In a row, and I'm like, oh. And so I'm seeing the trend. I'm like, man, it's tough to throw. Pineda's fucking, he's doing one every 3 months.
I
WealthCon
know.
In Vegas.
He's like the only person who does it.
Yeah. And so he seems to have it pretty dialed. But anyways, as much as it is a challenge, I go to these conferences and I'm like, I kind of want to throw my own once a year starting July of 2025.
On boutique hotels?
In the summer. No. This is going to be like everything. It's going to be all entrepreneurship, business, real estate investing. We're going to have all the best speakers out here in San Diego and just blow it up. And we're going to have like, we'll be like big, like 5,000 people right here in San Diego, middle of the summer, cool venue right on the water, and then have all the coolest like networking parties, the yacht parties. Like we have hookups in the industry here. So we can like literally have the sickest like networking events, all the nice dinners, go on the yacht, like all sorts of cool stuff like that, and just blow it up and make it like the coolest conference once a year that everyone can't miss.
It's going to take like 10 years off your life though.
what are your thoughts? Is that a crazy idea?
I would say that from like we're about a month out, the most stressful part is ticket sales. And if you feel like you've got like all good, we could sell this thing out easy, then it wouldn't be stressful. But I think like midterm rentals, people booked the conference without even knowing who he was because they're very interested in the topic. Same with like short-term rentals. But when you have like our topic is not super specific. It's like scaling your business. So like, it's like, let's set up your business the right way from the beginning. And like, let's talk about how to find and fund more deals. But that's not super specific. And so I feel like if you are vague, it can be helpful, like Ryan Pineda, or it can be hurtful because people are going to really be like, so what are we talking about? You know, Limitless is really successful. They have, I don't know, 2,500 people, 3,000 people. It seems like a kind of similar vibe. But ticket sales are like, because you can pre-sell the tickets, but then you need to prepay like the hotel staff, and you're just like, I'm fronting like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I know.
And like, I hope I can sell it. And then that means that it just takes away, like, I don't want to say advertising space, but kind of like you can only really advertise one, maybe two things at once. And so it's a trade-off. You choose to talk about your conference at the expense of talking about other things.
100%.
So
yeah, it would have to be like bring in all the best speakers and probably compensate like a couple people, especially the keynote speaker.
Yeah.
And then stack as many like big names as you can. And then
I don't know.
And then you would have to make a big push. I mean, how much do you think it would cost to host an event like this right on the water
people?
In San Diego with 5,000 people? Ballpark.
A million bucks.
A million? That's
yeah.
Not too bad. Because let's just do the math. So if we sold 5,000 tickets at, let's just say, average cost of 500 a ticket at 5,000,
maybe
that's 2.5. Do you think you could host it for 2.5 all in? And you could probably use some of that money to pay probably two or three like big name speakers to come out.
You know, it's probably way more than a million. I think you could host it for 2.5, but I think that I wouldn't want that stress.
And that's the other thing. It's like, okay, now it's going to distract you from your business.
It's distracting.
For like 90 days leading up to it.
It's distracting. I will say that. And so it's like, sure, you could make a couple hundred thousand dollars, but it's like, what do you
I wouldn't even do it to make money. I would like, the goal would be to break even.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So it's like, sure, build your brand. It people recognize you. It probably brings opportunity, street cred, whatever, but at the expense of what? Like whenever you choose something, you're giving up something else. And so what could you spend your time doing that could be much more valuable? And I think that's where events for me are hard. It's like if I went all in and I was like, I want to do events, I think I could get really good at it. But I found that it was a little bit distracting from everything that I wanted to do. So attention is really the, like, focus and attention is like the most limited resource. And the more successful you are, the more opportunities come your way and the harder it is to say no.
I 100% agree with you. Like, I think to get to where I am today, like from when I was an air traffic controller, government employee to where I am today, a lot of that was about saying yes to opportunity. And now for me to get to the next level, it's about saying no to a lot of opportunities and really focusing on one thing. You know, and that's growing the business and all the stuff that we're doing here within the hospitality space, getting better at the content, getting better at the podcast, getting better at the media.
So it's like, does that conference help you get there?
I guess it would be a brand perspective that would come out of it. I don't know. Okay, so part of me is like, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
But then the other part of me is like, man, it sounds pretty freaking badass. And what if it goes well? Think about this, Sully. If it goes well, it could be the premier conference of the freaking entire year that everyone's like, that's the one to be at every July in San Diego, on the water, 5,000 people, all the top speakers. And it's like the one to be at. I would play to win. So if we're going to host a conference, the first one, I'd be like, we're going to make a splash. This is going to be right out the gate, the best conference.
Yeah.
But
it's a big gamble. That's a big gamble. It's hard to get that many people. There's a lot of
people
in San Diego.
You could take a big bet. You could easily lose $1 million.
You could lose $1 million.
Yeah.
And so if you want to take that shot, go for it. I think there are probably things you could do with your time that would be less of a risk that would do a similar thing. Like you could spend all that time to build your podcast and invest some money in your podcast. And could you reach 1 million more people? I think you could. And so do you want to reach 1 million people?
Or 5,000 people.
Or do you want to reach 5,000 people?
Ooh, that's good. Hey guys, real quick, the only way the show grows, the only way we continue to bring on bigger and better guests is if you guys rate, review, and share the show. So if you could take 2 seconds or the click of the thumb to review on Apple or Spotify, it will mean the world to me. But more importantly, we'll be able to reach more entrepreneurs and more real estate investors and help them build wealth through this podcast. Now back to the show. Okay, so I want to switch gears here a little bit because you and I kind of got into like the content game around the same time. And
then you blew up.
You did too.
You blew up more.
And so I want to ask you, like, you know, I have a lot of questions in terms of like what you're thinking of algorithms now. They're always like changing constantly. But like, what was like the turning point for you day one to be like light bulb moment? Okay, I'm going to start posting out. I'm going to start posting daily content. Because it's a big decision for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back at like, so this was like 4 years ago when I started my Instagram.
Okay.
And I don't think that I like, because it was during the pandemic, no one had anything to do. I was baking bread, like whatever. And so to me, I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm just going to vlog what I'm doing. And it was honestly just a passion project. Didn't expect it to go anywhere. Started gaining traction. When I started to like monetize it a little bit, so I was coaching a little bit, like doing small coaching cohorts and finding a few investors here and there. By that time, I maybe had like 30,000 followers though. And I was like, maybe I should like try to take this a little seriously. And so I hired an assistant to help me like post more frequently.
Okay.
And I think that the algorithm, I mean, everyone complains about it today, but I think it was much better like a year or two ago.
Why?
The reach was so much bigger. Like if you go look at the head of Instagram, Adam Mosseri or whatever his name is, I love looking at his video comments. Everybody's angry. Give me my reach back from 2022. Give me my reach back. You're crushing us. We hate these new features. Give us our reach back. And so everybody feels it. Like it was a lot easier to get videos that had 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 views. And right now it's like you could have a million followers and you get like 25,000.
Yeah. It's very sensitive now, I've noticed.
It's really sensitive.
So like it's almost becoming like TikTok. TikTok's very sensitive and like
post a lot.
If it's a good video, TikTok will like send it to the moon.
Yes.
And then if it's like not good, it will get
200 likes. And I feel like I used to judge people when I saw they had a huge following and I'm like, only 200 likes. And now that's like my page sometimes. If it's like an post, like it just doesn't go anywhere. And that never used to happen. Like my old posts, every single one was like, at least it went to 50% of my audience. And now it goes to like 5% sometimes.
Yeah. I agree with that. It's definitely a lot more sensitive. And they are, you know, they basically decided, hey, we're going to put viral videos in front of people. And then if a video is not good, like we're just going to shut it off.
We just shut it down.
But I think for them, they've realized if they just play viral videos for people, they're going to keep the watch time up. And that's really the name of the game for them. So it makes sense. But like, and they're killing it with like the verified badge now, the subscription.
I know.
It's so genius.
It's like $15 or whatever it is. Elon
rolled it out first with Twitter. And then and then Meta was like, let's roll this out too.
Good for them. Recurring subscriptions. Them. Yeah. So I feel like, so love-hate relationship. It has opened so many doors for me.
It's social media.
Reason, yes. It's the reason why I'm in so many rooms.
Unfortunately,
it's like you have a big following. People want you there. And then they meet you and they're like, ah, yeah, you're cool. But like the number is what gets you in the door because they want your reach. I think it's incredibly valuable to build a personal brand. And as much as I've kind of like fought against it, I think it's like, all right, it's time to re-ramp up. And so I was just talking to Rob last night and he was like, you know, the solution to most of your problems is just more content. Mm. And I was like, I hate that answer. It's like anything else, give me any other answer. And he's like, just got to make more. Kind of like Alex Hormozi is like, quantity creates quality. And you don't really know what all the people who I know who have grown a lot recently, it's because they've been posting two to three videos a day on Instagram. And it's like, how many do you post a day? And I'm like, maybe one. And so, yeah, you have more content out.
And it's really the long game. Like, I love Alex Hormozi, by the way, but he says, his podcast for the first 4 years had 2,000 to 3,000 downloads a month and it never grew for 4 years. And then all of a sudden the last 2 years he's blown up and people are like, oh, like it must be nice, blah, blah, blah. But like, he's like, dude, no one watched my videos. No one saw my content for the 4 years that I was posting all the time before that. And now he's getting a lot of traction in his content, his podcast episodes back then. Sometimes he'll like rerun them and I'm like, holy shit, that was from 2019 and it's fire, like really good. So
wow.
He was still putting out really good content back then. Yeah. Just no one knew about him.
I met his creative director. He was filming his podcast for Bigger Pockets the same day that I was filming my podcast for Bigger Pockets. And so
Hormozi was?
Yeah.
Okay, that's dope. Did you get to
meet him? Cody Sanchez, yeah.
Nice.
But they like rolled out the red carpet for them. They're like, everybody do those sides. nobody say anything.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty funny.
It was Layla's birthday too. So I was like, happy birthday. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, they're great.
They were great. They were really great. I learned a lot from watching their stuff. And I feel like there's a lot related. They're kind of in the business and marketing space, but there's just so much overlap, especially in the hospitality space. It's like, if you can make your hotel go viral, then your hotel will be booked constantly, direct bookings. Your rates will be crazy. Like, influencer marketing is huge. Like, you can get a couple viral videos and it'll blow up. And so that's kind of what I'm excited to do, is like, my skill set in the team is in marketing and it's in branding. And so what an interesting gift to be able to give to the group is like, let's try to make this thing a viral hotel.
Yeah, I love that. So what platforms are you posting on right now?
This is where Rob is like, bad, solely, I only Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's because it's a place I think I should diversify. It's more so I'm looking for somebody to run my social media. So if anybody here wants to run it, let me know.
I'm sure there's listeners out there that would love to.
Yeah.
There's someone listening to this right now that would love to. I mean, you're already putting the content out on Instagram. And so it would take 2 seconds to post on TikTok, Facebook Reels, and YouTube Shorts.
I guess I used to do YouTube Shorts.
YouTube's tough for me.
YouTube's tough.
Haven't figured out YouTube yet.
It's really difficult. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of tweaking. And so I'd love to get on, you know, even LinkedIn. I honestly feel like
on LinkedIn?
So I try to, but I want to. I see like Investor Girl Brett. She does a lot of LinkedIn.
Really? I didn't know that.
And she gets a lot of engagement. And so my network is a bunch of commercial real estate brokers. And like I worked with at my second company, I worked with a lot of startup founders. And I'm like, these people are like money. And so if only they knew what I was doing, like my professional network would start investing with me. And so I'd love to get into LinkedIn, especially on like the membership side of things. A lot of people, like a lot of companies are like, they don't look on Instagram. They look at your website. They look at your Google reviews and they looked at LinkedIn. And so if you have a presence there, I think it's easier.
I think a lot of people look at Instagram though now.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. I think it's the most commonly used platform. So I think like if you're doing a transaction or like you're working with a lender, I think they all look you up on Instagram. I believe that. And I actually have my Instagram, like I have a button under my email signature. So my signature is there, the headshot, and then it has a button for Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or TikTok, one of the three.
Okay. I want to do Twitter too, because I have some friends who...
Twitter, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how Twitter works.
Are you on Threads?
I am. Yeah. Do I post? No. Okay. But I have a lot of followers on there because people just transfer.
Sure. And those are easy. That's easy content. Like people love that stuff.
I
and
know.
Then you could literally... You can make a Twitter post and then copy and paste to Threads, screenshot, and put on Instagram. And now you're hitting three platforms in like 5 minutes.
I just need someone to do it for me.
There you go. Okay. Okay.
So whoever's out there who loves making content, come my way.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of stuff to build.
So you need another Parker. And Parker planted an idea in my head yesterday. We're going up to shoot a podcast up north with DJ. Shout out DJ Young, new podcast. But he's a professional pickleball player. And he came on my pod and he was inspired to start his own. I'm like, dude, you totally should. So he like ripped it and started his own. And so I went up there. But anyways, yesterday Parker's like, dude, we should hire another content person, a second person full time in the office. I'm like, okay, well, sell me on it. Like, what are we gonna get out of it? And he's like, dude, we'll be able to post like double the shorts, double the reels. He's like, we can do 5 episodes a week on the podcast versus 3. And I'm like, well, hold on. I'm not gonna record 5 episodes a week. And he's like, well, we can like literally take like highlight clips from all the past content. And even if it's like a 12-minute segment. Yeah, like a 12-minute segment on Soli and Rich ripping on social media content and branding, right? And then boom, that's another episode.
That's what like...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But people have like themes too. So like I listen to a lot of Amy Porterfield. And okay. She'll do like a 12-minute segment. Like this is just me and you talking. It's not an interview. It's just...
Yeah.
Whatever topic it is. And like, I'll talk to the camera for 7 minutes. And
yes.
If you could just do a bunch of those, you could film the entire year in just a few seconds, right? So I personally really like those. Like, I like listening to interviews, but you never quite know where they're going to go and if they're going to be good.
Yeah.
When you listen to solo episodes, I feel like they're very intentional. I have a very short attention span. And so if people start talking about something random like this, like super random, but it's like, I didn't come on to hear about this. Like, I'm going to turn it off. But 10 minutes on a podcast about a certain specific topic. I love it.
100%. What is the number one key for you to get like a Instagram reel to like do really well or like go viral?
These days, I don't know. If I knew, I'd be doing it every day. Yeah. It used to be. So what I found for me, it was sharing numbers. I don't know why, but like
people like
people
stats.
People love seeing my cash flow. People love seeing how much money I lost specifically to the dollar. And then I also think that the posts that I do that do the best, maybe not the biggest reach, but do the best on my page are very vulnerable mistake posts.
Okay.
Or like,
where you're just being completely honest with something that maybe went south.
A mistake or like a real life issue that people don't like to talk about, but talk about. Like when I had a parasite a year ago, like everyone wanted to hear about it. So let's talk about it. And it's weird because it's like, you know, my page is maybe 90% educational, but 10% is just like, they want to know you're a person. And so I would say there's like different types of posts. There's the ones that go viral. And then there's the ones that really nurture your audience. And they're worth different things.
They are worth different things. I
but
agree with that.
People will remember. Like, I remember the weirdest things about people. Or I'm like, oh, I love that spaghetti recipe you put. And it's like from a year ago. So you never know. Like, people resonate to really strange things. And they remember different things. And I think you just need to add a little bit of both to your social media.
Totally. Yeah, we're always like, Parker and I meet like every Monday and we're like, all right, what's the content plan this week? What reels are we putting out? And what's the plan? How can we get better? And we'll rip and like, we're always just trying to get a little bit better and
what's
a little bit
working
better.
For you right now?
What's the hooks? It's the first 3 seconds. And so
what's your favorite hook right now?
Well, we're doing a lot of podcast content.
Okay.
And so the hooks are always changing.
Do you
so
feel
we
like
have
that
to
works?
Go off of, because these are like organic conversations, right? Me and you are just having a conversation right now, but we will meet after every episode and be like, okay, what's the title? And then what are potential clips that we can clip out that will do well? Sometimes I'll have an episode and there's like 10 clips. And then sometimes I'll have an episode and we're like, I don't know if there's any, you know? And that's just the
name.
Let's
get on our clips. What is this episode named?
That's the nature of it. But we're always like, okay, it's the first 3 seconds is everything. And it's the hook. And then taking out all the boring parts in between. And like you said, people love the numbers. They love the quick facts, the stats, the stuff that people want to like save and share. And then that's what holds the watch time.
I feel like yours that went viral before, because I was watching pretty closely, were your entity structures. Like there's a couple of them with the whiteboard that I was like, dang, these videos are like millions of views.
I need to get back to the whiteboard stuff. I've kind of gotten away from it. We've been doing so many podcasts that like a lot of the short form is just like podcast stuff right now. But what we've been doing is really branching off and like doing a lot of topics outside of real estate investing.
I've seen.
Which has kind of been good.
Botox?
And at first I was like, well, I don't know if like the audience is going to like be into that. But it's been cool because we've had a few videos like pop off that are like completely random topics. And I'm like, okay, it's cool to know that I don't have to talk about real estate investing.
Do you see a follower conversion though from that?
Not as high. It's much lower. So like the videos that pop off that are not real estate investing or wealth or like anything about business,
right?
They don't have a big follower conversion.
I think that's the question though. It's like, do you want to even attract those people? I mean, I think it's great to have viral videos on any topic, but if your page, when they go to it, like you only have 5 seconds for them to decide if they want to follow you or not. And if a thing goes off where it's like, I don't know, about something random, like professional pickleball.
Testosterone.
Or testosterone. Like, they expect to go to your page and see, like, buff guy. And it's like, well, you are buff, but.
I'm not. I'm just getting warmed up. So I'm not on the testosterone yet.
No? Are you going to try?
It's definitely in the cards. Like, everyone that's on it, that's, like, my age or older, they're like, Rich, fucking game changer. Like, you need to get on it right now.
Is it just, like, steroids? Is
like,
that
Dr.
what it is?
Dr. Botox was on a couple weeks ago. He's like, dude, I just got on it a month ago. He's like, it's a game changer.
How so? Feel better?
It's like, boost your testosterone level, but it's like, it's not like you're going to the back room at the gym in the locker room and like some dude's pulling out a backpack and like shooting you in the ass. It's not like that. It's like monitored. They're checking your blood levels, your T levels, and it's like monitored by a doctor. So it's like completely safe and legit.
All right. Well, let me know how it goes. I'll actually listen to the podcast. I'm sure you'll share in a solo episode about testosterone. Yeah.
Now, the one thing I'll say about this is like, yes, you don't convert a lot of followers with the random content that pops off, but we're reaching a bigger audience for it. And so my vision with the podcast really is to kind of do what Joe Rogan does, is bring in, you know, he has an emphasis on like, you know, MMA fighters, but 80% of the time he's bringing on all sorts of different guests, doctors and athletes and actors.
Is a UFO specialist.
Ooh, that's really good.
I've been listening to a lot of those.
Yeah, that's really good. So, and for me, I get bored having like real estate conversations every single day. And so I'm like, it's good for me to also have like other conversations. That's how I learn. That's how I grow. But I think to like really like throw a big net with the podcast and really scale it, we got to bring on different guests. And that's kind of my vision for it.
Do you feel like social media is for everybody? Do you think everybody should have a social media presence?
Everyone should be on social media. Now, should everyone put out content? No.
No.
No. I think people that are like putting out content on subject matters that they don't really know very well, and they're not speaking from experience, I don't think they should be putting out content.
Although I started my Instagram before I had any rental properties, but I wasn't teaching. I was just documenting.
You're documenting.
And so
there's a big difference.
Anybody can document. And honestly, it's much more inspiring to watch somebody document than to have somebody jump on and say, I'm worth $5 million, but you missed the whole back end of the story.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's important to document, because if you're going to like, your goal is to buy right real estate and then eventually start raising money and getting lending, if someone goes to your page and you have nothing about buying boutique hotels and you're trying to get a loan for a boutique hotel, you're trying to raise money all of a sudden for a boutique hotel, and someone goes to your Instagram and there's zero stuff about real estate investing, there's not going to be a lot of trust there.
Right. And that's actually why I started the series, because I knew that like the whole 60 days to your first boutique hotel thing, I was like, I'm doing it so that I can curate my audience and teach them that I'm pursuing a new asset class. Because if I just randomly try to raise money off of an asset class no one has heard me talk about,
yeah,
they're going to be like, where did this come from?
Yes, exactly.
This is super random.
So you're sprinkling it in now, which is good. But you already have the clout for the real estate investing. So it's not like oh my gosh, I'm doing this brand new thing. Like when I was doing multifamily and then I did my first hotel, like investors for like, they had no concern.
Didn't care.
They didn't care at all.
I think it's pretty small too. So if it was maybe like a $10 million deal, they might be like,
yeah,
maybe you want to partner on that, but it's small. Like 13 units is very similar to the other properties I own.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Nothing crazy.
Well, Soli, I appreciate you coming down and hanging out. Always a pleasure to catch up. I'm a big fan of everything you're doing, and yeah, keep inspiring, keep crushing.
Come to Palm Springs soon.
I will definitely come out, dude. How can the folks get in touch with you?
Instagram, as you've heard, best place to go. It's Lattes and Leases.
Lattes and Leases, one of the best handles out there. She's Soli Caetano. I'm Rich Summers. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one. Peace.